All right. We're now going to move from the music panel to a session called The Stimulus and Standards, and I'd like to introduce Dr. John Halamka. He is not just a medical doctor, but also a chief information officer, the chief information officer of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, chief information officer of the Harvard Medical School, chairman of the New England Healthcare Exchange Network, chair of the U.S. Healthcare Information Technology Standards Panel, and co-chair of the Health IT Standards Committee, as well as, in his spare time, a practicing emergency physician. So it's good to know that while he's doing all those other things, he can still take a call, run out and save somebody's life. Anyway, we're really excited to have him talk to us about open source, open standards, and how we can make some real progress in healthcare IT. So, Dr. Halamka, welcome to the Open Your World Forum.
Well, thanks so much, and I really enjoyed your last panel. I do play the shakuhachi, which is a 300-year-old Japanese flute instrument. And so, hey, I would much rather talk about open source in the music industry than healthcare standards, but if we must. So if you recall, about 16 months ago, Obama signed the $787 billion stimulus package for our country, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA. In that act is $30 billion for healthcare IT. And what I'll talk through is, well, what does really that act tell us to do? What are the regulations that have come out since that act? And how is open source and open standards relevant? Just to give you a quick bit of background before we launch into that plan, I run a data center with a couple of petabytes of healthcare data for 3 million patients, and the entire infrastructure is run on Red Hat technologies. So I have multiple data centers, multiple clusters of Linux servers, and we haven't had downtime in a couple of years. I think the answer today is no CIO in healthcare is afraid of open source. In fact, the movement to Linux clusters that are highly reliable for healthcare is the way the back end of most data centers in healthcare seem to be going. So I think open source and open standards are great. So let's talk through, next slide, what is the stimulus, and what does it mean for healthcare? So the stimulus includes a series of grants, specifications for standards, something called meaningful use that we'll talk about in some detail, and the idea that we're going to look at products and decide what products are good enough, that is, apply some certification criteria that say whether it's commercial or open source or self-built, it's good enough to achieve the goals that we have for this country. Now, there's $30 billion behind this, and so let's take a look at how that $30 billion is going to be allocated, actually much of it already on the street. So if you look at the grants, there's $2 billion in grants to accelerate healthcare IT adoption. Now, if I were to ask everybody at this conference, what do you think is the likelihood that your doctor uses an electronic health record? I'll tell you, based on other surveys, that about 65% of patients asked think their doctor is using an electronic health record. The reality is it's more like 15%, and it even depends what you mean by an electronic health record. If you mean Microsoft Word, well, maybe it's 20%. But if you mean a decision support, e-prescribing, rich mechanism for recording all aspects of healthcare data in a structured way, it may be more 2%. So we have to accelerate the adoption of healthcare IT in this country, and so there's $643 million that's been allocated to 40 centers throughout the United States to build SWAT teams that will go out to the doctor's offices of America and explain how they can best automate their offices. Because doctors are great at care, but they're not great at infrastructure. They don't know a huge amount usually about privacy, security, or disaster recovery. So let's ensure that there's this SWAT team that can say, we're going to transform your practice from paper-based to automated, and here's some vendors you should talk to, here's a cloud computing resource you could use, here's a best practice to redefine your workflow from what has been 3x5 index cards in the past, but should be completely web in the future. There's $564 million allocated to the states. So these grants were actually given out 2 months ago to 50 different entities at the state level to promote healthcare information exchange best practices. As we'll talk about, exchanging healthcare data requires that we standardize the information that's being recorded in healthcare electronic records and then send it from place to place using standards, protect privacy using standards, and all these standards are open consensus standards. They're not proprietary. There's a huge move in this country to get all the stakeholders, payers, providers, patients, vendors, to use open standards to record and transmit healthcare data. But we need to figure out how to do that. And yes, there's federal policy being made, but also in the trenches, states that have to build empowering infrastructure to make that happen. $118 million for workforce development in community colleges and universities to train the professionals that will go out to the doctor's offices and help them do this. $235 million went to 15 beacon communities in this country, and you'll see that some leading states have been given $15 to $20 million each to show how the use of technology in their regions can build quality, efficiency, and safety improvements. There's $60 million to some really interesting strategic projects, just informatics research. Now imagine, there are four of these. There's one for security, one for patient engagement, one for novel network architectures. The novel network architectures is very open source based. So if I were to ask folks, how is it that you buy an electronic health record? Well, the reality is today you don't download it from the App Store. What you do is you go to a vendor, you spend a very significant amount of money, could be $60,000, $70,000 per a doc, could be $20 million for an enterprise, and you get generally a large monolithic software stack that is proprietary. Well, what if you could create a marketplace by which multiple vendors could create modular components of an electronic health record that would differentiate themselves on features? Well, then you could have an environment, a plug-and-play ecosystem, where pieces, components, I want this person's e-prescribing system, I want that vendor's lab system, and I want this charting system, like an iPhone-type environment, and I'm not suggesting it is iPhone because that is proprietary, but an environment, an ecosystem that would enable modules to communicate with each other and ride on a similar network platform. So there's $15 million as a part of that $60 million that happened to go to Harvard to do an investigation of that kind of architecture. And then we want an open mechanism for the data exchange in this country, which is called the Nationwide Health Information Network, or NIN, of using open standards in novel products that would enable data to be sent from point A to point B and ensure it's not changed or intercepted along the way. So there's $64.3 million to fund a variety of federal projects and demonstration pilots throughout the country with regard to this Nationwide Health Information Network, adoption of standards, and early funding for certifying those products that comply with the standards. Next slide. So let's take a look at some of the detail of what federal regulations have come out since the $700 billion Stimulus Act was passed. There's something called the Interim Final Rule. Gotta love that government speak. Interim Final Rule that talks about the open standards that have to be used in the context of this $30 billion that's being spent on healthcare IT. And specifically, it outlines content, vocabulary, transmission, and privacy and security standards. Content, the idea of how is it that I create a package of information about my healthcare history that I'm going to send from place to place. Vocabulary, within that package, how do I make sure that I, as a doctor, use the same descriptions on a medicine or a problem or an allergy that another doctor does? Because the last thing you want is to exchange data among doctors and have one guy say it's high blood pressure, another person say it's elevated blood pressure, and another person say it's hypertension. It's three descriptions for the same thing. So, guys, let's use a common vocabulary. Transmission of getting it from place to place securely, as I mentioned. And privacy and security, how do you guarantee who is doing the looking, who is at the endpoints, who has a right to see what, under what circumstance? So recognizing that it is after lunch and it is a warm day, I now get to go through four or five slides filled with acronyms about standards. This is going to be very exciting. Okay, next slide. So the way that these regulations chunk up is they've looked at various domains in healthcare and figured out what the best standards to use for the country will be. They're all open standards. They're all done through the ANSI process. So for the summary of your lifetime health record, a continuity of care document or continuity of care record, which is an XML construct that summarizes your problem list, your medication list, your allergy list, your labs, and some documents, is the right package to use. One way, in a completely open fashion, for any payer, provider, or patient to exchange a summary. Now, within that summary, as I mentioned, you want to use vocabularies. So for problem lists, SNOMED, which has been licensed for the country by the National Library of Medicine, although it is developed by a pathology organization, it is now fully licensed for use throughout the United States and many other countries in the world. So in a sense, it's like an open source component. It's licensed for fair use by everybody. Medications, if I want to say Tylenol or acetaminophen and have them refer to the same substance, I need some way to map generic and trade names and various designations that might be used by the Food and Drug Administration or pharmacies. And RxNorm is an open source database provided by the National Library of Medicine that maps all these various terms together, and it's freely downloadable from the National Library of Medicine. Allergies, although there is no specific vocabulary required for 2011, by 2013, the UNI, or Universal Ingredient Identifier from the FDA, a free open source vocabulary, will be used to describe substance, food, and environmental allergies. And vital signs, similarly, 2013, there'll be a way to do that using something called the Clinical Document Architecture. And units of measure, using the open source UCOM, Universal or Unified Code for Units of Measure approach. Because right now, believe it or not, in medicine, we don't have any kind of standard units of measure. So I could report a lab in milligrams per deciliter or furlongs per fortnight, you know, whatever I want. So next slide. Now, within domains like sending prescriptions from place to place, there are certain standards that are used. So, for example, today there are millions and millions of drug prescriptions sent to pharmacies using something called the NCPDP standard, and that's an open standard. It's actually part of Medicare Part D, and RxNorm, that open vocabulary standard, will be added to it. So as a country, we're actually pretty good. 95% of the pharmacies in Massachusetts are connected electronically. More and more docs are using e-prescribing. We're about 40% of the country right now is doing e-prescribing in some fashion. The only gotcha on this one is the DEA has previously prohibited controlled substances to be e-prescribed. So that means that I could use open source standards in an end-to-end, fully encrypted XML construct for Lipitor, but that's right, for OxyContin or morphine, I use a pen and paper. How crazy is that? Well, the DEA has just issued an interim final rule saying, actually, doctors can e-prescribe controlled substances if they use two-factor authentication, and that could be biometric or hard token. And so it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of years what novel software solutions come up for two-factor authentication for doctors to enable e-prescribing of controlled substances. Next slide. And so let's look at another domain, administrative transactions. And so that's how does data get from a doctor's office to a payer, like Blue Cross? Well, HIPAA required a standard to be used called X124010, and we're now all moving to another standard called X125010, which will give much richer data as we go from providers to patient offices. And so this is now going to be required. In fact, the healthcare reform legislation that just passed, slightly controversial, includes many provisions for streamlining all the processes and paperwork between providers and payers, and every one of these standards that is there is an open standard developed through an open consensus process. You'll see over the next 120 days a whole bunch of deadlines in healthcare reform for even expanding the amount of data, the kind of data, and enrollment in a health plan. Because remember, healthcare reform is about expanding coverage and affordability of healthcare, will be fully electronic, so it will be as easy to enroll in a health plan as it is to buy a book on Amazon. And there is a work group that is just convening to get all those open standards ready, so it's so easy to enroll in a health plan. Next slide. quality. Now, measuring quality is something that's rather hard to do. I mean, how do I know if your doctor is delivering good quality care? Well, turns out that the National Quality Forum, the NQF, has put together experts that have looked at processes of care and outcomes of care and figured out electronic ways to figure out if you got the right tests, if your tests have the right values, if it looks like you're getting the right care, the best practice. So within healthcare IT reform, this bill called Meaningful Use, there are 110 quality indicators, and those will be required to use a whole set of standards, in this case called PQRI-XML, to submit numerators and denominators to CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, so that healthcare quality can be monitored. And I'll tell you that this is pretty foundational for healthcare reform, because in the future, doctors should be paid based on quality, not quantity. Because today, doctors are paid for the more procedures they do or the more tests they order, as opposed to the outcomes they get or the wellness they achieve. This is a whole set of open source standards around measuring quality as a foundation for supporting healthcare reform. Next slide. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could discover H1N1, swine flu, very early in an epidemic? Because right now, of course, it's just anecdotal that emergency rooms say, well, yesterday I had 3 coughs, and today I have 30. Well, using an open set of standards, the HL7251 standards, and using some open source vocabularies called LOINC for labs, Unit of Measure, UCOM, and the SNOMED CT that I described for problems, there is a requirement in 2011, I'll go through some of these requirements in a moment, that all the data for laboratories in this country be sent to public health, local, state, and federal, in a de-identified way. So it's not about compromising privacy. It's about early detection of infectious disease like H1N1. So we could actually figure out, oh, yes, there was a food plant that had E. coli, or there was a new novel infection that emerged very, very rapidly through the use of standards. Next slide. Now, surveillance is a lot about looking at symptoms and not just lab results. So what if you went to an emergency department and you had a fever? Well, that could be a lot of different things. It's not a lab test, but it sure would be nice to know if there was a big jump in fevers that suddenly occurred. And I'll tell you that this is a hard thing to do. We had a situation in Boston some years ago where we wanted to do public health surveillance. And one of the things, of course, we wanted to do is gather the triage chief complaint. What is it the patient said was the problem? So a child went to Children's Hospital with a nosebleed, and the nurse wrote as the chief complaint, bleeding. And then a woman went to the Brigham Hospital with what's called placental abruption, a problem of pregnancy, and the nurse wrote chief complaint, bleeding. A gentleman was stabbed and went to Boston Medical Center, where the nurse wrote, chief complaint, bleeding. And then the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, said, oh, my God, there's an Ebola outbreak in Boston. Everybody's bleeding. So this has to be done pretty thoughtfully. And getting the right standards, the right open standards, to record the chief complaint in a very granular way and send it to public health is something that's going to be required by 2011. Next slide. And immunizations. If I were to ask any of you, so can you tell me what immunizations you had when you were 2? My bet is it would be a struggle. At best, you probably have a yellow card that you keep in your passport that may or may not be accurate. And so what we should do as a country is, using open standards, record all the immunizations that anyone has and make that retrievable for everything from camp physical forms to, hey, if you work in a healthcare environment, you need it as your employer wants to see what immunizations you need so that you can get the extra ones so that you're safe to treat patients. And so you'll see in 2011 a requirement for using these same open standards, the HL7231 or 251 standards, and a specific vocabulary from the Centers for Disease Control to describe the immunizations that you're getting at every point of care. Next slide. Now, getting data from place to place shouldn't be hard. I mean, right? every day we're sending data from place to place when we do online banking. Every day we're using email, sometimes thousands of times, unfortunately. Well, so sending data in healthcare, it's a little bit more complicated. You know, we need to really be sure who we're sending it to. We need to really be careful that it's not getting intercepted along the way. And so the standards that were proposed in the regulations are using SOAP, a standard mechanism of using an HTTPS post of sorts to get data from place to place, or REST, more like the HTTP GET type protocol, to send data from place to place using the web, all encrypted using HTTPS. And there's been a lot of talk recently, too, about using SMTP, the simple mail-type protocols, with transport layer security, TLS, like SSL, to send data over regular old email but make sure it's secure from place to place. This is still being worked on, and there's an active project called the Nationwide Health Information Network Direct Project. It's trying to do some prototyping using actually Ruby on Rails, using Java, using open source technologies to say, how can we get data in healthcare from place to place? You'll see in the next 60 days or so some open source libraries becoming available that anyone can experiment with. And we do need to make sure that it's kept secure. There's a couple of ways to think about security. There's security at rest. You know, what if I have a bit of data on a thumb drive? What if I have a bit of data on my laptop? I want to make sure that's encrypted, and the standard there is AES, very commonly used. If I send data from place to place using TLS or using IPsec or using IP version 6, and then a bunch of policies to make sure that the data is not read or transformed along the way, such as digital signature using a hash, such as SHA-1, making sure we audit everything so that we know who looked at what, where they were, and why. Now, one quick comment on privacy and security. I recently had a security breach at Beth Israel Deaconess that went the following way, that an authorized employee who could look at data from the inside of the network did a data analysis, copied the data to a thumb drive, and then after a year left the organization, took the thumb drive, got employed at UCSF in California, copied the data from the thumb drive to a laptop at UCSF. The laptop was stolen in California, recovered a day later in a pawn shop when the pawn shop owner opened up the laptop and called up Dell Computer and said, hey, can you help me? And Dell said, that laptop's stolen. And we got the laptop back. The likelihood of patient data compromise was extraordinarily unlikely, but it was an unencrypted laptop. And hence, we have to report all privacy breaches, and we reported it to the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and all the patients involved. So this notion of encrypting all mobile devices, all data at rest when it leaves your data center, is something that's taken very seriously. It's part of the stimulus bill, and increasingly states are requiring encryption of mobile devices. And we're doing all this using these open standards that you see here. The next slide. Now, all of this, all of these standards that I've talked about are all about achieving healthier patients, getting better quality care, and we're not talking too little or too much care. We're just talking about the right care. This isn't about rationing care. So what the regulations say is, well, here are all the standards you have to use, but here's actually what we want you to do, doctors. And if you demonstrate that you do all these good things, then we're going to give every doctor in America $44,000 of stimulus funds after they have proven that they have achieved the quality, the safety, and the efficiency goals we're after. So this is not a cash for computers stimulus. This is a we'll pay you only after you've achieved the intended result. So today, in a lot of hospitals in America, in fact, 75% still use paper. That's right. They handwrite medication orders. Is that a 5? Is that a 7? Is that a milligram or a nanogram? Well, the difference between the 5 or the 7 or the milligram or the nanogram could kill you, and it's all dependent upon handwriting. That's insane. My grandmother was actually killed by a medication error because there was a lack of coordination of care, lack of decision support, lack of electronic health records, and she got a combination of medications that caused a big health problem. So by 2011, this regulation requires that we have 80% of our docs in the community using e-prescribing, ordering labs electronically, communicating with other doctors electronically, and that our hospitals at least 10% of every transaction be a fully electronic, from the doctor's brain to the patient's vein, with no paper and no handoffs. Now, you may look at that 10% number and say, what? 10% is a passing grade? I know my 17-year-old daughter would love that to be the case, but you have to start on an escalator that's moving at a speed where everyone can get on. And I will tell you, the community hospitals of this country haven't deployed a lot of these technologies to use electronic data entry inside their hospital. So the 10% in 2011 gets them started, and by 2013, it will be much more rigorous. Next slide. Now, we want to make sure that as medications are prescribed, they're checked for drug safety. You're not allergic to them. They don't interact with each other. You want to make sure that using open standards that every clinician in America records the medication, the problems that you have, such as do you have high blood pressure, do you have high cholesterol, in a standards-based way, using one of these vocabularies that I've mentioned. Next slide. Now, e-prescribing, I've talked a little bit about, and e-prescribing turns out to be not only getting data to a pharmacy, so that is, there's no handwriting and it goes fully electronically, but also making sure that medication is going to be reimbursed, the insurance company covers it, that you've looked at the whole history of all medicines the patient's been given, and you make sure that it's correct, and that you make sure it's routed to the retail pharmacy, and a refill could be done at the retail pharmacy if requested by the patient. And so there's a whole set of activities that use these open standards, using the drug formulary check called the NCPDP formulary benefits standard, and sending content from place to place and using these controlled vocabularies I've described to make sure that e-prescribing is done in a safe, efficacious way and that all clinicians can contribute to safe medication practices in a community. Next slide.
Dr. Halamka, what slide are you on?
So let's see here. I am. We should be on. I've just pulled up my other presentation here. We should be on slide 17. So yes, somehow we jumped from slide 16 back to an earlier slide. So slide 17.
We're all good now. Thank you.
Sure. We're going to also describe your allergies electronically using these standards that I've mentioned. We're going to describe demographics using standards. Now, here's the funny thing about open standards. Standards are often developed in a consensus process. Now, you would think it would be a relatively easy consensus process to decide how many genders there are in the United States. Well, what we did is we surveyed all of the major institutions and standards development organizations throughout the world, and we found there were 27 different possible genders. We've, in the United States, decided there are only four: male, female, other, and unknown. That's it. You know, that's your choice for gender. So we have now created a whole set of code sets using open standards that enable doctors to record race, ethnicity, gender, and ensure that there are no disparities of care, that we can look at quality across all of the patients that we care for and make sure that care is delivered equitably. Next slide. Excuse me. And we also want to make sure that we can record vital signs, such as height, weight, blood pressure. We want to calculate body mass index. Obesity is a big problem in this country. We want to record that using open standards. An example of open standards that does this in a novel way, I have a bathroom scale at home made by a company called Y-Things. When I weigh myself in the morning, it does a web-based query out to a database to determine what my last reported height and body shape might be. It then looks at my weight today, calculates my percent of lean body mass, my body mass index, and then using open standards reports all my data to my personal health record, my doctor's electronic health record, and even Twitter if I want. Now, I'm not quite certain why somebody would want to tweet their weight on a daily basis, but hey, if that's what you want to do using an open API, God love you. You can. And so here is just a mechanism of making sure that we're requiring the body parameters to be put into electronic record in a standard-based way so we can really make sure that our patients are healthy and track obesity and really look to make sure that folks with high blood pressure are having it under control. We'll want to look at smoking cessation status in a standard way so that we can ensure that that patients are enrolled in wellness programs and smoking cessation programs, and record labs in a standard way, because right now we have thousands of labs in this country that aren't recording information about the labs in a comparable standards-based fashion. Next slide. We'll want all of our electronic health records in this country to have business intelligence capability, so that you can query not only a patient's record, but you could say, across all my patients, how many diabetics have had eye exams? How many of my patients still smoke? These kinds of business intelligence or aggregate data functions should be possible. We want to make sure we can report quality measures, and I've already described that, 110 different quality measures from every clinician in America going to Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and that's foundational for healthcare reform. Next slide. We want to engage patients and families. We want to be able to send our patients reminders. What care do you need to keep you well? And this is going to require a real opening of a variety of proprietary products today, because I would tell you, how is it that you should communicate with patients? Is that Facebook? Is that a personal health record? Is it email? How do you do it? Well, being able to figure out how to connect every patient and every doctor using the web, making it very open, making data flow much more openly, is going to be a real challenge over the next couple of years. It's required by these regulations. Having decision support so doctors know to order the right test, do the right thing for the right patient at the right time. Sending data to payers using standards so that all of those administrative transactions I mentioned happen at low cost. You know, sometimes it's said that 25 to 35 cents of every healthcare dollar is just spent on administrative data exchange. It's wasteful. If it's all open, and there's an ecosystem of data exchange with patient consent between payers and providers, you take the cost of administration way down. Next slide. Now, so much of this is really about engaging the patient. So you should be able to give patients a copy of their lifetime medical record on request in a standard open XML-type format for which they could take it from doctor to doctor. They could upload it to their personal health record. They could use a novel product that might provide them educational materials, graph and chart their information, provide them some guidance, enroll them in a clinical trial. So as you open up healthcare, take it away from closed proprietary silos of data, you could just imagine the number of patient-facing products that are possible. And not only do we want to make the data available to patients, but even give an online access so that you could download your data, or you could get to, in a web-based fashion, your problems, your meds, your allergies, your lab results. And we've been doing this at Beth Israel Deaconess for the last about 12 years or so, and patients really love it. They really feel having an e-enabled doctor is a market differentiator. Next slide. You want to make sure that as you leave the doctor's office, every ambulatory visit, you could get a copy of what happened in that visit, your medications, your labs, the doctor's thinking, and take that with you in electronic format using open standards. We want to make sure that doctors can send data from place to place, from a specialist to a primary caregiver, from a hospital back to the primary caregiver, and do it using open standards. And if you're going to be able to keep a medication list across every provider that you have completely up to date, you better have open standards that communicate the data from place to place, these NCPDP standards that I mentioned, and require it at every transition of care. And that's part of the 2011 regulation. Next slide. When you go from a hospital to a skilled nursing facility or a long-term care facility, you want to be able to have your records travel with you, and not only your text, but your images, your EKGs, your waveforms. And as I mentioned, you want to make sure that we have as a country the capacity to exchange data for the public good, immunization data, public health data on labs, and next slide, the sending of syndromic surveillance data. Now, all of this is only going to be possible, this using of open standards to send information from place to place, if patients trust that this is going to be done with their consent and that there's great integrity to the infrastructure. And so the regulation requires that every organization, every healthcare organization in America, do a security audit or an updated audit to make sure that their borders are secure. I spend $1 million a year on intrusion detection and prevention, white hat hacking teams, antivirus software, malware defense, various types of proxy servers to keep the evils of the internet away from my healthcare data. And that's the only way to build public trust is to illustrate that you're doing this much and have an auditor confirm that you're in good shape. We recently had a white hat hacker firm do penetration testing of a variety of websites, and it's this sort of vigilance that makes sure that we keep innovating as fast as the hackers innovate. But I'll tell you that it is a cold war, and one of the successes that I have had using the open source products is that there are many eyes on open source products, and we have tended to see good security and good reliability because there is such a community of folks looking at, testing, and improving open source products. And so the recent security penetration test that I had on specifically my servers running the Red Hat cluster of my clinical systems showed that they were extraordinarily secure and provided a good defense against all those hackers across the Charles River in Cambridge at MIT. Well, next slide. So let's summarize and just open it up for a couple of questions. That in 2011, the federal regulations around the $30 billion that are being spent for healthcare IT require a set of open standards, a set of open techniques, a set of removal of data silos, of exchanging data, that will evolve to even more in 2013. And so there's now a real emphasis of migrating from proprietary and closed infrastructures. It is no longer a doctor's office, a hospital, a pharmacy, a clinic, a lab. It is a community, an ecosystem of participants sharing data using consensus-based standards and a variety of open source approaches. These products will be certified as being good enough, as being conformant with these open standards approaches. As you've seen, there's about 25 different projects that every healthcare institution in America, every doctor in America is going to have to do to build this ecosystem of open data sharing. And the thing that's going to make it work is the open standards and people coming together to solve problems as a community, as with the NHIN Direct project that is four tiger teams using open source software to show data transmission from place to place. It's only by working together, not in silos or a vacuum, that we can achieve that healthcare future we all want, which is about care coordination, about getting the right quality care at the right time, at the right cost. So I'm very optimistic, and I'm certainly looking forward to the next year to two. The only downside of $30 billion coming to healthcare IT, it's going to be the dot-com revolution all over again. My only worry is my valued employees are going to be offered Arion chairs, cappuccino machines, and foosball in the startups that are going to be funded by some of the stimulus dollars. But alas, we'll hope it doesn't happen. So with that, happy to open it up to your questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Holomka. It was a fantastic presentation. It stimulated a lot of thoughts, but I want to ask you what I hope is a simple question and then a second question which maybe can encourage a little bit more discourse. So the simple question is, some European countries are becoming concrete in their definition of what actually is an open standard. And in particular, we have seen some people adopt the language proposed by the Open Source Initiative of the five characteristics of an open standard. My question to you is there yet, because I have never seen one, a consensus on what an open standard is as you have been referring to it through this presentation?
Well, sure. I'll tell you that what we have used in the Health Information Technology Standards Panel that I led, and then the Health Information Technology Standards Committee, which is this national standards group that is part of the Office of the National Coordinator related to stimulus, that we look to standards that are created by standards development organizations using the ANSI, the American National Standards Institute, methodology for open, transparent, consensus-based standards making. And then we look to organizations that write implementation guides that are based on ANSI standards. And so that's really it. It's either you're an SDO, a standards development organization, that ANSI has blessed as being an open, consensus-based, transparent organization, or you've written implementation guides based on that work. And that's what you're using.
Does that preclude patented implementation? Does that preclude the requirement of patented technologies, which would consequently preclude the implementation of an open source or free software implementation?
Well, I'll tell you, it's sort of interesting that if you look today at all these standards that I've described as part of the regulation, every single one of them is either in the public domain from the National Library of Medicine, or they are developed by ANSI-accredited standards development organizations. The only proprietary standard that's really out there in healthcare at the moment is what's called the CPT codes, which are the procedure and terminology codes that are put out by the American Medical Association, which do have to be licensed. And what I've proposed, and I think will be discussed at the federal level, is if that is something that we are all going to use because it achieves a good outcome, then at very least it should be licensed by the federal government for the open use by all. So at the moment, there, at least in the regs as written, there is nothing that is patented and proprietary and closed.
Yet.
I mean, it doesn't preclude it, but there's nothing there.
Great. Okay. And then the other thing, this is something which you largely did say through the course of your presentation, but it's an insight that came to me as a sort of a compact statement. And basically what I heard is that quality is a two-way street, and that perhaps one of the things which has really frustrated the achievement of many of these forms of quality has been a successive development of one-way processes that don't really permit the kind of feedback which is so natural in our open source community. And in fact, when I think about certain various pharmaceutical, you know, testing scandals, the problem has been that many companies' business plans are dependent on a one-way flow of information, on a one-way flow of profit, on a one-way flow of PR management. And as we get a lot more open source in there, and as we get the public more aware, enabled, involved, et cetera, when we can make quality, medical quality, a two-way street, we are going to see a quantum improvement in individual as well as public health care. Is that a correct interpretation?
I think that's the case. And let me tell you why I think it's true in two ways. So first, I think that quality is a differentiator in the marketplace. And if you look at the Beth Israel Deaconess website, www.bidmc.org, we put all of our quality indicators on the public website. And our CEO blogs every day about the importance of transparency. If you've done bad stuff, be honest about it. I mean, the only way we're going to improve as a society is if everybody's honest about the good and the bad they do, and that patients can then decide where they want to go based on the outcomes you're achieving. There's nothing hidden. There's nothing closed. When I look at where today HHS is going, I really do believe that Health and Human Services, with healthcare reform, is going to encourage an open consumer marketplace where you can go to the place you want for care based on the measurement of quality that occurs there. And the organizations will be paid based on the outcomes and quality they achieve, and not just the amount of medicine they deliver. The ecosystem, as you've just mentioned it, absolutely is going to change. It's going to be based on the openness you've described.
That's fantastic. I want to make one more comment to the listeners who are out there. All of these presentations will be both available at the end of the webinar, but also audio playback is also available. And then I want to take one more question before the break, again, on this question of quality, which is another thing that strikes me, and this ties in with the presentation that Dr. David Upton gave at the beginning at 9 o'clock this morning, East Coast time, which is that the importance of being able to measure and adapt to our quality metrics, I see, is something which is extremely important because as part of nature, it is our nature to evolve. It is the nature of our diseases and health challenges to also evolve. And I think that an industrial medical system that does not tolerate evolution in care and adjustment in practices is ultimately doomed, as I think we have sort of seen in the old regime. And so I think that this ability to make the systems more open and fundamentally more adaptable is, I would like your opinion on how you see adaptability as a key capability of the future of healthcare.
Well, sure. And so what you find in healthcare is that every year there's a new compliance requirement. Every year I'm finding that I have to support hundreds of new requests. And it changes quite hard. What I've been able to do through using open, web-based IT systems that bring data to anyone, everywhere, on any device, is that we have been able to come up with very novel, rapid change in our organization. So I'll give you an example. Some years ago, the Joint Commission, which accredits hospitals, said you need to make sure medication lists are right for everyone in your organization at every transition of care. So what we said was, you know, that sounds to me like a wiki. You know, however strange this sounds, it'll be a secure wiki, but that every provider of care, every nurse, every pharmacist, every social worker will go contribute to a patient's record and make sure that the medications from a community standpoint are correct. And what we did by creating that ecosystem of all these people sharing responsibility for the patient care in an open fashion, just on any device, any operating system, using a software as a service kind of model, is we were able to achieve workflow redesign and adoption of this compliance requirement very, very rapidly. And even though it's a closed and proprietary device, in some ways, the day the iPad was introduced, we went live with it because the iPad does use, on Safari, open web-based standards. So every one of these products that I've described that we run ran flawlessly on the iPad day one.
And there was much rejoicing.
Indeed.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you so much. I want to apologize to myself for taking 2 minutes of my own break time. But thanks again for participating, and we will all be back at 2:15 when I will be giving my presentation about transformation and the open source way.